Sunday. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone.
Hello, Tuscaloosa.
It's finally cool.
I'm so glad. Are you sick?
I am. I mean, I don't know what happened. I have been checked with our staff at the Student Health Center earlier in the week. I said, okay, I need you to give me a strep test. I need you to check me for the flu, or else my husband is not letting me come home. He's like, you have to stay away from the baby. But now it's just some lovely post-nasal
drainage. It kind of sounds like, well, I had a little bit of that, and I think it was just from the weather changing, and I'm so grateful. It's so nice outside.
I know. It feels like October now.
Yeah. I can't believe we're in October. I think when October 1st happened, it was almost like just a daze that day because I couldn't even remember September. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a bad thing or a good thing.
It's the shift in mindset, and then it's just that domino effect of all of these fun holidays that come up. So you've got Halloween and Thanksgiving, and then you have everything that's happening in December. And so, I don't know. I love it.
Well, and I'm glad that the weather is cooling off. I'm definitely a summertime person, but I have to say the weather has been getting on my nerves.
Yes.
And it needed to take a chill pill, and I think it did.
I think it really did. I think I'm actually going to be more prone to wanting to be physically active outside now that it's cooled down. So taking a walk after work is going to be, you know, more ideal than,
because you want to be outside. It feels good outside. You know, it's funny because teaching classes, you know, when we're inside the rec center, our air conditioning is like set on 50. It's super cold in there. And we need it that cold. But then when you come outside and you've had on like workout pants, they are not good for hot weather. It is the most uncomfortable thing to wear. And so I'm just trying to get to my car. So like, hopefully I can turn on my air conditioning, but now I don't have to worry about that. Yeah. And just roll down my windows. It feels great. So I'm very grateful. And we have to recap everybody. We got our flu shots.
Yes, we did.
Because I think we told all our listeners.
Yes. And we can actually, we will even put somewhere in the social media
and universe.
Actually, I think on WVUA FM's Insta story, they used a picture of us. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Clearly, I need to follow our radio station, and I will do that right now.
Absolutely. We're pulling out our phones. Now, speaking of physical activity, you know, one of the last times I saw you earlier this week was at our employee work and wellness, work-life balance
work-life expo.
Yes. I saw you and Charles out down on the floor. Now, I did not go down, but I wanted to know, did people actually partake in the physical activity?
Look, okay, here's the thing. We had one participant the whole day. That was all we had.
Oh, my goodness. Well, hey, if anything else, it's a good experiment of showing, you know, how apt people are to be physically. We can ask, what would prevent you or entice you to do
it? You know, honestly, it was really funny because when you would walk around and you would get your food and your goodies, people would come in and sit down. They thought we were putting on a show. So at one point, me and Charles and then Dee, we just get up and I go, guys, quick, let's pretend we're exercising. So I turned up the music and we're like, doing some stuff, and then people will kind of look and then they just walk away. And I had one person come down and he was a really nice guy, and he was actually used to be one of our members at the rec center, so I think we might have got a membership out of it.
Okay.
So that was a plus, but no, we were reassessing what needed to be changed. I think we want to be more visible next time.
Sure.
And so I think that's our plan. But, you know, it was the first time we ever did anything like that. So I was like, let's just try it and see what happens. But it was a nice morning. I mean, we got to hang out together and talk and think about some program ideas, which was cool. So it wasn't a total waste, I'll say.
Absolutely. No, and I'm always just blown away by the types of vendors that our university is intentional about having for our employees. We have a new coworker who just moved from Mississippi and is having to establish all of these different services for her family. So she was just like, oh my gosh, this is great.
Perfect opportunity. Yeah.
All of this stuff. So I thought it was super helpful.
Yeah. But it was good. I mean, and I think I walked around a little bit and checked out some stuff, but it was a good day.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, I saw you from afar and I had to ask. But also with October, that is Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Yes.
And so we get the pleasure of talking about that today.
Yay.
And we have an amazing guest, which we are going to introduce after the break. But y'all, it's time for a break.
Tell them, Sheena.
Grab a beverage. Hey, maybe this time it's not a cold beverage. Maybe you're getting some cider, some hot chocolate.
Tea.
Maybe a pumpkin spice something. But regardless, something, and we will catch you after the break. You're listening to Fit to Be Todd with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone. And during the break, we were just talking about what has been happening with my voice. Of course, Whitney quickly picked up on the fact that I was or am a little under the weather, and I made the comment that I feel like a little boy going through puberty, a little Peter Brady action
little
going.
Little Peter Brady.
But, you know, just a throwback in. For those of you who are too young to know what that reference is, please Google it.
Yeah, you the gotta, Brady Bunch.
You've got to find
some good life stories. Oh. Mr. Brady had a lot to say.
Yes, he really did. And it's blended families.
Yeah.
Oh, all of the things.
I'm still not sure about Alice the housekeeper and why there was really a housekeeper, because Mrs. Brady didn't work. So.
I know, and she was a pretty good homemaker.
I don't know. I'm just so confused. But anyway.
Yeah. So, and we mentioned at the beginning of this show, October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and it gives us the opportunity for fabulous guests. And so I actually want to introduce our guest right now. It's Dr. Marianne Kelly, who is an assistant professor in the Capstone College of Nursing. Now, did I say your title and position correctly?
You did.
Okay, perfect. I like to be very sensitive to that because we work hard for the roles that we have at UA, so I want to make sure it was correct.
Well, I'm so happy to be here today.
We are glad you are with us. So it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and so talk to us a little, before we dive into all of that, talk to us a little bit about your current role and just what you do and your history of working at UA.
Well, I have now been at UA for 16 years as a nursing faculty. I started in maternity nursing, and now I am a four-day clinical faculty in fundamentals.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, so what are you doing in fundamentals?
Yeah, I'm like, what is fundamentals? That's my next question.
Fundamentals is basically the basics of nursing.
Oh, okay.
So we learn things like bed baths, bed making, feeding patients, turning patients, cleaning patients.
Oh.
Okay.
But you know, that's like, it doesn't seem super important because it's like these little things that you do, but they are so important. Like turning people in the bed, mm-hmm. like you cannot lay in a bed mm-hmm. the same position. Wow. Fundamentals.
Yes. Well, I remember last fall when I had my son and just, of course, that time in the hospital after giving birth, really just being at the mercy mm-hmm. of my nurses. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful just at such wonderful bedside manner that they had, and really just being very cognizant of just the sensitivities of, you just feel so exposed and uh-huh. vulnerable. And the fact that I could tell that, you know, they were being sensitive to that was top notch. So, yes.
Well, that is my true love, is maternity.
Oh,
so,
that's awesome.
Yes, I do miss that a little bit, but I enjoy my fundamental students because they are like almost like open books, just waiting to be filled.
Sure.
So I enjoy doing that. So that's basically what I do 4 days a week. I take students to the hospital or clinical practice lab.
Okay. Now, education-wise, where did you obtain your education from?
Well, I am a Mississippian.
All right.
Okay, very nice.
However, since I've been here 16 years, I am a Roll Tide fan.
There you go.
Roll Tide.
Yes. And if we had a camera here, you would see that she is donning her houndstooth today.
Yes.
Of course, got to represent. So actually, two of my degrees are from Mississippi, my BSN and my MSN. And then I actually came to UAB for my PhD.
Okay.
And that's kind of how I ended up in Alabama.
Okay, I like
that. Basically been here since.
Well, we are glad you're here and you're on our show, but we want to talk about breast cancer health and awareness. And so we've noticed that your research interests include many women and minority health issues. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, my main focus is breast cancer awareness, early detection in African-American rural underserved women. Mm. I've been studying that topic probably almost 25 years now. Mm. So since I've been in Alabama, 16 of those years, I have been studying that topic the entire 16 years here.
Wow.
So, wow. What piqued your interest in such a specific area?
Well, other than the fact that I am African American, I actually have a family history. My mom succumbed to the disease. And then recently I was diagnosed, and I am now a 4-year survivor.
Wow. So, awesome. That is awesome.
Two areas. So once my mother was diagnosed and all the things my family went through with that diagnosis, I just felt the need to educate as many women as I could about how they could live with a diagnosis of breast cancer.
Well, you know, when I was when I knew we were going to have you on the show and this was our topic, I was actually looking at breastcancer.org and the Susan G. Komen Foundation website, and I saw that they had both cited that in 2019 there was going to be an estimated 268,000 new cases of invasive breast cancer and over 41,000 breast cancer deaths. And those kind of numbers are so staggering to me. They're just very, very sobering, for lack of better words. Just, I don't think that people always realize the prevalence of that. And so when they say, can you tell me a little bit about what's considered invasive breast cancer versus what would be non-invasive? Are there certain tiers of that? Or is there a specific reason why they might have used that word invasive?
So, yes. So tumor cells are actually, because your regular cells start growing irregularly. And so if the cancer cell is just in like one little duct of your breast and it hasn't gone anywhere else and it hasn't gone to a certain size as far as millimeters or centimeters, they call that non-invasive.
Okay.
And so the numbers that you just quoted doesn't even include those women.
Right, right. That's what I was thinking.
Even though those women still have to go through treatments, they just don't include them because it's caught at such an early stage, which is wonderful. So once it starts spreading and getting larger, then they call it an invasive cancer.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that with me. Yeah, because I was thinking, I was like, if that just explicitly and exclusively stating invasive, I'm like, what could these numbers look like? So yeah, that's good to know.
Well, and I think, you know, our listeners are all over the place. They are students, they are faculty, staff, community members, and with it being National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, what kind of activities are you aware of that are being done at UA, Tuscaloosa community, to raise awareness of breast cancer?
Well, you did mention earlier about the employee wellness, life wellness.
Work-life
Wellness Expo.
Work-life wellness expo, yes.
Well, there were quite a few tables that had the pink ribbons.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of like every department at some point in time will say something about breast cancer awareness. But actually, the Capstone College of Nursing, we actually have a table every Monday in October talking about breast cancer awareness.
Ooh, where is that table located at?
In the lobby on first floor.
Okay, we'll have to make a trek over there tomorrow.
Well, and you know
Mondays,
what?
Mondays. That is tomorrow.
Yeah, it is. I know. I wish this weekend was longer.
I know,
I really wish this weekend was longer. We can only pray for we don't get Columbus Day. No, we don't.
No. We'll be at work.
So
please come back tomorrow.
We will come back tomorrow. But I know at the rec center we have one of the little Christmas trees, the little white Christmas trees where you can put, like, you can write somebody's name on there.
Right.
Is that related to you guys?
No, actually, that is the Women and Gender Resource Center.
Okay.
That places
that. I did not know that.
That tree every, pretty much every October.
Okay.
So people can recognize those that have succumbed to the disease.
Yeah.
Or even to honor those that are survivors.
Yeah. And I'll share this with you guys, and then we'll take a quick little break. We actually do a class at the rec center. It's the stretch class in collaboration with DCH Hospital. So survivors that are surviving breast cancer will go to the impact meetings with DCH, but then they also get referred to me, and I give them a tour, and we give them a complimentary membership to the rec center, and they get to come, and they get to do the class with us. And so we focus on strength, because depending on the type of trauma that these ladies have had, and some gentlemen that have had, we focus on certain stretches to loosen everything up. And honestly, it's just a good community of ladies that come in.
That's great.
It's great. So we'll have to talk more about that, but we are going to take a break. Y'all hang tight. Thanks for listening to us on your Sunday afternoon. That was my happy dance. You're listening to Fit to Be Tie with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone. Welcome back. You're listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone. And Dr. Kelly is with us today, and we are talking about breast cancer health.
I like that.
Did you like that?
Yeah.
I wanted to like grab our listeners,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly. We're talking about breasts.
We're talking about breasts on the radio. But this is a really good topic and good conversation, especially since it is October and we want to honor that and bring as much awareness to breast cancer as we can. So I think really talking about early detection is key.
Yes.
Not like that's the only thing to look at, but I think that with our listeners being all over the place, college and faculty staff members and community members, I think early detection is a good idea to talk about, especially for our college ladies.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
So what kind of knowledge can you drop on us about
early
detection?
Yeah, like how old should this start?
Yeah, like, when?
You know, what should this look like?
Well, it depends on what reference you read. So I usually tell my college age or even teenagers that if you have breasts, it is time for you to be aware of your breasts.
Mm-hmm.
So start looking in the mirror for changes in your breast, and we can go in detail as to what you're looking for, but you need to know what your body looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, as you get older, kind of past starting your menstrual cycle and getting finished with the pains and things that go along with menstrual cycles, and you get used to that, then I would say start actually touching and examining your breasts to know the changes, such as lumpy breast or drainage from your breast or soreness in your breast that is unusual. So there's lots of things, and we have lots of literature that can help you understand that.
So I'm guessing, you know, if you're younger and you're going, like when you go through puberty, that's what I'm thinking is like if you're, I guess middle school is like the, it's been so
that's
long ago.
Beginning.
Yeah, oh gosh. Middle school years. So like middle school years and when you're developing and when you're going through puberty, like really you need to know what you look like. You need to start taking note of these things. Mm-hmm. And so would you say like teenagers even in high school need to start?
I would say teenagers in high school would become aware of what the breasts look like.
Okay.
We usually don't suggest breast self-examination yet, just because your breasts are changing so much.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time you become a college student, like 19, 20, 21, then, you know, your breasts are pretty much like they're going to be.
Yeah.
Now, as far as mammograms go, what is the starting age for having that type of exam? And does that age recommendation change if there is a family history of breast cancer?
Very good question. So the age right now is 40. 40 years and older should start their yearly mammograms. However, if you have a family history, risk factors that put you at higher risk of getting breast cancer, then we suggest as early as 35.
Okay. And forgive me for this sounding like such an ignorant question, but it's really for my curiosity, and hopefully many of our listeners have this type of curiosity, but what exactly is involved in a mammogram? You know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I've never had one.
Right.
I'm not,
and
yeah.
As much of in a nutshell that we can, you know, share on the radio, I guess I just, you know, even like what does that process look like? Obviously, it involves some kind of equipment beyond just a human
this
touching.
This is going to be the best,
you know?
Show. Everybody is listening right now.
Okay. For those who have never had a mammogram, I would suggest that you Google what the machine looks like. But yes, they will actually put each breast individually in a machine, and they will actually try to condense that breast tissue as much as they can. So some people think of mammograms as making your breast like a pancake. So maybe not a pancake, but you will be flattened out some.
Mm-hmm,
and it could be a little uncomfortable if you have not prepared yourself for it. So things like decrease the caffeine. Do not be on your menstrual cycle when you go, if at all possible, because your breast will be tender anyway. So those kind of things. But it is to take a picture of all your breast tissue and to look for any changes that could depict a cancerous tissue.
Wow.
I appreciate that explanation just because it's not anything that I've ever thought about in terms of, oh, what's involved in that? You just hear you need to get a mammogram at this age, and it's like,
40 is the age, like you unless you have a family history.
Unless you have a family history or many risk factors. And that could go into a whole nother discussion as to what are risk factors.
Well, you know, which, Whitney, I'm pretty sure you and I, we're the same age, right?
We are. So, 34?
Yeah.
And so can we say that on the radio?
Yeah, so we're on the brink of 35 later this fall.
Yes.
So, you know, so now I'm thinking, okay, I need to look and see. I mean, surely I wouldn't know if I had a family history, but I might need to call my mom this afternoon.
You might need to call your mom. Because I didn't find out that, well, of course, I knew my mother had it, but I did not know that her sister, which is my aunt, also had it.
Wow.
Until I was diagnosed. So, yes, you may need to ask those questions.
We need to call our families.
We do.
Yeah.
Send that text. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Right. It's like, so, we just need to check this out.
So, how often, so let's talk about an actual breast, like at-home breast exam, because you gave us these little goodie bags, and I was looking through it, and I was like, oh my gosh, this looks like a little pamphlet. On like what's normal and like how to do a little like breast exam, which is really cool. So how often should you do it and like what should you be looking for?
So things that you should be looking for are changes.
Okay.
So we call it breast self-awareness now rather than a breast self-exam, because a breast self-exam sounds more medically like. So yes, I had to be trained to do a breast self-exam. But to be aware of your breasts, you just have to be sure of what is normal for you. So if you have inverted nipples, and you've always had inverted nipples, that's totally normal.
Okay.
However, if you all of a sudden wake up one morning and one of them is inverted and the other one is not, that is something you need to go get checked.
Okay.
Also, of course, lumps that are obvious, redness that is obvious, obvious open sores, any drainage from your nipples, one breast being larger than the other one that are changes, because people normally have one breast larger than the other. But if this is a change, I cannot emphasize enough, a change. Mm-hmm. So the only way you will know it's a change is to be aware of your breasts at all points in time. So how often should you look at your breasts? Well, I say whenever you look in the mirror.
Every day.
But I would say take some time at least once a month, preferably after your menstrual cycle, so that your breasts are back to normal. And look in the mirror and look for changes and touch and feel at least once a month.
I love that we're talking about this, especially on the radio, for it to be broadcast. Because I think, you know, I think nowadays we're a little bit more comfortable with things. Mm-hmm. But I think there's still this, like, we can't talk about that. Or, like, you can't look at yourself like that. Or you can't, like, do that. But, like, yes, it's your body and you need to understand your body. And I think that's great that you're mentioning those things. For sure.
Right, because I feel like, you know, I've had friends that will even just say like, oh, my partner will tell me if they've noticed something. And I'm, you know, they're like, my partner's the one that's touching my boobs. I'm like,
but at the same time, like, you need to, like, you know. Yeah.
I know. Sorry for saying boobs instead of breasts. I should keep it more, you know, clinically speaking.
Well, it's just ups our ratings, you know.
It does.
Please check your own breasts.
Yes.
Well, no, I mean, again, like Whitney said, I love that we're talking about this, and I think that you've brought a lot of clarity to what these processes look like, and like you said, just having that self-awareness, and then even with the mammogram, for me to know what that process looks like, because at first I thought like, oh, is it going to be like an ultrasound wand that they just, you know, kind of stroke all
it's
over?
It's an x-ray.
Yeah.
It's an x-ray.
So that's good to know for sure, but I mean, I feel like, you know, we have so much information that we're able to share in the show today. And Dr. Kelly, I know that you mentioned you're going to have some additional stats to share with us as we start talking about some lifestyle factors. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious to debunk some myths or some, you know, some things that people sometimes will make assumptions about the correlation of certain lifestyle behaviors with breast cancer and the risk for that. So I guess we're going to be talking about all of that stuff, you know?
I'm excited. I can talk about breast cancer awareness all day, every day.
Well, listen there, y'all. So we got to take another break. You were listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and Whitney. Grab that beverage. Grab that bathroom break. Go check out your breasts. And then come back and join us. We'll catch you after the break. Welcome Welcome back. You're listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone. Oh my goodness, I can't wait to tell my husband that I told people to check out their breasts during the break.
Well, technically, I think before you used the word boobs, but then yes. We had to say breasts.
Yes, I was just like, we'll use some clinical terminology. And so, hubby, if you're listening, there you go. But, okay, so before the break, you know, I know that we had alluded to wanting to talk about certain lifestyle behaviors that affect or prevent breast cancer. So I'm just going to stop right there and let you take over, Dr. Kelly. You know, what does that look like? Are there certain things that affect or prevent breast cancer in relation to physical activity or other lifestyle behaviors, maybe the types of things that maybe quote-unquote vices that we engage in, so to speak?
So in medical terminology, we do not like to use the word prevent breast cancer because there's so much surrounding breast cancer as far as family history and genetics. Mm-hmm. So we say early detection. Sure. Mm-hmm. So of course, lifestyle does play a part in it. So things like exercising or not exercising. So, of course, exercise helps a lot of things, including breast cancer prevalence. So, it's been shown that women who are overweight or obese actually have more fat tissue, and fat tissue, believe it or not, produces estrogen, which has been linked to increased breast cancer risk. So, something to think about. Hmm. So, do those exercises. Also, eating right, of course, high-fat diet leads to obesity, which leads to, again, those fat cells. So, of course, low fat, you know, some fiber in your diet. Believe it or not, alcohol and smoking. We already know that smoking is linked to so many cancers. Mm-hmm. It's also linked to increased incidence of breast cancer. Alcohol is also linked to increased incidence of breast cancer. Mm. Now, let me talk about stress level. Since I am a faculty member and a nurse, so yes, we're under a lot of stress. So women who are under increased stress have been shown to have increased incidence of breast cancer.
Oh, goodness.
And so we think that, well, first of all, women who are highly educated usually have higher stressful jobs, excuse me. Women who are highly educated have more stressful jobs. Stress is linked to cortisols. Mm-hmm. Cortisols in your body leads to deterioration or inflammation of your cells, which can lead to increased incidence of breast cancer. So just something to think about.
Wow. So we need to exercise. We need to eat right or better.
Yes.
We need to decrease our stress.
Yes.
We don't need to smoke.
Right.
And we don't need to drink excessive alcohol. We could still have a drink or two. Yeah.
So,
or not.
I'm just going to say,
literature. No. Tell us.
Well, they actually haven't linked to an amount of alcohol.
Okay.
So the studies basically were surveys to just say women who said they drunk alcohol versus women who said they did not. There was decreased incidence of cancer in those that did not drink at all.
So we don't have an actual like, okay, these women said they drink the recommended, like whatever, cups of whatever, glasses, okay.
Yeah, there's okay. No number.
Oh. Now, is there any concern out there about people being on oral contraceptives and correlation with breast cancer?
So that is a hot topic. So for women going through menopause, we already know that hormone replacement therapy has been linked to increased incidence of breast cancer. Where those hormone replacement therapies for those in menopause had estrogen in them. So some birth control pills or oral contraceptives have estrogen. So those that have estrogen have been linked to increased incidence of breast cancer. But we have so many oral contraceptives which have progesterone only. So I would say discuss that with your healthcare provider.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, if we had a camera on the show right now, you would see that we are a very diverse group of women here at the table. We have a beautiful African-American woman. We have a Caucasian woman. We have an Asian woman. And so with all of those different ethnicities, are there groups that are at higher risk? Or what does that, how does that break down?
Very interesting question. A great question. So, believe it or not, Caucasians have the highest incidence of breast cancer.
Okay.
Next to them are African Americans.
Okay.
And then Asian.
Okay.
Falls under that. Hispanic actually falls before Asian.
Okay.
As far as the incident numbers. However, as far as the health disparity, of all the races, African American have the highest disparity in actual mortality from breast cancer.
Oh, yes. My goodness.
There is as much a difference as 8%. Mm-hmm. For instance, 20% of Caucasians may, 20% of Caucasian women may actually die of breast cancer compared to 28% of African Americans.
Now, does that have to do with access to resources or when detection happens? And I know that that can be completely.
There are so many factors.
Mm-hmm. So many factors playing a part. We used to think it was access to care, and so. Of course, urban versus rural, it has been shown that rural women have a higher incidence or higher rate of mortality versus urban because of access to care. However, whether you are Caucasian or African American or Asian, if you don't have the resources, then of course the cancer will grow longer and of course the mortality will be higher. But there's so many other factors. I could take a whole list of all factors that play a part.
Well, we might just have to have you on for a second show sometime.
My pleasure.
We definitely need to do that. Okay, so I was thinking and I was reading and I was looking and, you know, something caught my eye. And it was this consumption of dairy products, which we know that I am a fool for ice cream. And so I think we need to talk about dairy for just a second.
Okay, so diet, since I'm sitting at the table with a nutritionist or a dietitian, there's some debate about, there's a debate about dairy products. First of all, if foods are high in fat, which we know that a lot of dairy products are high in fat, and ice cream are high in fat.
I'm very aware.
So the studies that I have read does not particularly point to just dietary, just dairy products, because most persons who are eating a high-fat diet also eat a large number of dairy products. So it's kind of hard to divide that line, talking to a dietitian. Mm-hmm. So if you eat pork chops and hog maw and chitlins. We're in the South, y'all. And pig feed, also you're eating things like fried chicken every day. And then on top of that, you eat ice cream for dessert. Then I can't really link your incidence to just
It kind of all, it kind of like all lumps in when you have certain food choices. Well, and then I was also thinking about, you know, I'm kind of a hippie at heart. I really am. There's things about me. I love my essential oils and all that good stuff. And I have tried hippie deodorant, and it don't work. Have you tried hippie deodorant?
I have. No, I've gone so hippie that I've actually gotten the, like, just the crystal itself. And
is this really a thing that antiperspirants are causing breast cancer or linked to breast cancer?
So the last literature search I did, it said no. Antiperspirants do not cause breast cancer. And the reason they were saying that is because a lot of antiperspirants have aluminum in in them. So if you look at the actual literature that linked aluminum to breast cancer risk, it was more like the workers in plants that produce aluminum.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
You getting that?
Yeah.
So it's just like if I work at a chemical plant, I'm at higher risk of a lot of diseases. Same with aluminum products. If it gets in your system at high enough level, it's going to cause a lot of things, including breast cancer.
Wow.
But your deodorant does not have that much aluminum in it.
See, that's what I'm wondering, because I got to have some antiperspirant. I'm just going to tell Tuscaloosa, Alabama right now.
Because we get ripe easily.
Well, yeah. And especially being in the South, hippie deodorant does not work.
Yes.
What were you saying you use?
It's, basically, my mom used to get them from the Oriental grocery stores, and would be like this little like crystal rock thing, and you would literally like you would apply it to yourself. Like,
do you feel it on you?
No, it's like it melts away, almost like a it would be similar to like a salt slab.
Oh,
and it just kind of.
You think it works?
It did when I was like a young girl and not like a smelly 30-year-old woman.
Yeah.
But I think that's the component that they use in the hippie deodorants, and they grind it down and make it a paste.
Oh, so that's interesting.
Yeah. But okay, you know, obviously we've got to take another break, and normally we do not keep our guest on for the last 5 minutes, but Whitney and I have a couple more questions to ask you today.
Sure. So for sure.
Happy to assist.
Well, we are going to take a break. So you guys go grab your cold drink or hot drink, and we'll catch you on the other side. You're listening to Fit to Be Tie with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone. Welcome back to Fit to Be Tie with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone. Thanks again for spending your lovely Sunday afternoon with us with some cooler weather, some fall weather. And we are celebrating Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And we've had Dr. Kelly on the show. And we are going to close it out with some more little tips and tricks that she may have up her sleeve. But most importantly, I think we need to talk about the resources and the recommendations for the community. So do you know of any outreach opportunities or support groups or organizations, like if someone wants to be a part of those things, they can volunteer to be a part of?
Because weren't you involved in something pretty snazzy yesterday in Birmingham, right?
Oh.
Well, actually, I was. So it was the Susan G. Komen Foundation Race for the Cure, which is the largest race in the state of Alabama. Also, it raises funds for breast cancer research.
Oh, nice. Okay. Now, are there any opportunities for individuals to get involved in breast cancer awareness or raising funds specific to Tuscaloosa? Or is that kind of more of like a regional type?
Well, actually, we have an American Cancer Society chapter right here in Tuscaloosa.
Okay.
And you can volunteer at any point in time. I think it's in your Google. American Cancer Society, Tuscaloosa.
Oh, that's good.
Also, the DCH Manderson Cancer Center has support groups as well as volunteer opportunities for those that want to work with oncology or cancer patients.
And kind of going off of that, I know I mentioned it earlier, you know, the Cancer Center, the Rec Center works very closely with them. This has been something we've been doing for a while, but I think it's changed hands from different facilities because I think that it used to be another facility in town, and then it kind of lost a place, like they didn't have a home anymore, and so we took it on. But we actually, I will get referrals, as I mentioned earlier, from the Cancer Center for Breast Cancer Awareness. And that's part of their programming, is they will reach out to me and I will meet these participants in the lobby and give them a tour of the facility. Because the rec center can be very intimidating. It's a big facility and everybody thinks, oh, it's just students, so I have to kind of be mindful of that when I'm giving them that tour. And I make it very easy. I have them come in, show them how they swipe their action card. When they get that, parking services has been great to actually comp their parking pass for the rec center. So they can only park at the rec center, but at least they don't have to pay for anything because they found that to be such a value to get somebody into exercise. But we do stretching depending on the type of trauma that they've had, but then also some strength exercises. And most importantly, it's really a support group. And so it's been going on at the rec center, I mean, over 10 years. I want to say probably 15 years maybe at the rec center. Of course, I've been in my position about 8 years. But so if you know anybody, or if you guys are listening and you're a part of DCH Breast Cancer Center and you've gone through treatment, then definitely come reach out to me. And I'd love to set you up.
Well, thank you for that information, because I learned something today.
Yes.
Well, one thing, and I think I mentioned this during the break, I think it's probably important for us to note that breast cancer is not necessarily a women-exclusive cancer. Is that correct, Dr. Kelly? I know the prevalence is obviously much
females,
different.
Yes. Yeah. Females, of course, have the highest incidence. However, about 2,000 men will get breast cancer in 2019. Of that 2,000, about 500 will actually die of the disease.
Now, do you know, and just from your work, how detection usually works for the male population? Or
usually, that's probably why the mortality rate is so high, is because they don't notice it until it's visible.
Sure.
And once the cancer is visible, it's pretty large by that time. So men think they don't need to do breast self-exams, but men can do it also. They have tissue. So just be aware, look in the mirror, you know, check yourself every month, just like females.
men, be aware of those breasts, not just the ladies' breasts. But
you know, I wonder, like, when a male actually goes into their general physician, if that's something that they talk with them about. They don't, you don't
normally
think so?
Normally not. No.
That's very
testicular
interesting.
Testicular is more of a male thing. Yeah, prostate, sure, yeah. But not breasts.
But I guess it goes back to what you were saying. If you see, and this is knowing your body, not just even your breasts, but also knowing, like, just your body and taking note and knowing any changes in your body, right, to be very aware of those. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good takeaway from this.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I just, I love today's show. Dr. Kelly, thank you so much.
You're so welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. Yeah, you took time from your Sunday afternoon. Yeah, oh, my goodness. Yeah. So we are grateful. But you guys, thank you so much for listening to us. We hope that you have learned as much as Whitney and I have.
Oh,
we,
man,
definitely have learned a lot today.
Yes.
But y'all have been listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone. And we hope you have a wonderful week.